Check engine, ABS, or maintenance light on? Take the guesswork out of your warning lights with O'Reilly Veriscan. The service is free and provides a report with solutions verified by ASE-certified master technicians. And if you need help, we could recommend a shop for you. Ask for O'Reilly Veriscan today.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
On the job, every minute counts. That's why Lowe's now has ProBlock Quick Dry Primer, expertly manufactured by Sherwin-Williams. Engineered for pros to dry fast and go on smooth for virtually flawless results that keep your job moving. It's available in oil and water-based, and getting it is easy. Order online by 2 p.m. and get free same-day delivery right to your job site. Lowe's, we help, you save. Orders placed after 2 p.m. will be delivered next day. Valid in select zip codes. Subject to driver availability. More terms apply.
Okay, so picture this. You're not like stuck in traffic, right? Instead, you're just zipping between these gleaming towers in Lenoke, maybe in your own personal flyer.
Or maybe gliding across Olympia on one of those silent transporters. It's a cool image.
It really is. And today we're doing a deep dive into exactly that, the transportation tech in Rick Lofton's Seven Colonies series.
Yeah, we've been digging through excerpts from the author's novel and also material from his blog. And it's really striking just how core transportation is to this whole world.
It's not just getting from A to B, is it?
Not at all. It's fundamental.
It feels like it shapes everything for the Evo species. I mean, how they move, how goods move.
Yeah.
That dictates city planning, how different groups interact.
Exactly. And it plays a massive role in the bigger story, too. Thinking about, you know, how the coalition comes together.
Yeah.
The whole situation with the mutants in Volume 1, the Commencement Day massacres.
Yeah.
Travel and projecting power are just key.
Yeah. Absolutely key.
And the variety is just amazing. You've got these agile hover bikes, the luxury flying cars, the really unique transporters.
We definitely need to talk about those.
Oh, yeah. And then warships that can actually breach near space, and proper intergalactic spaceships, too.
It paints a picture of a society that's really, really invested in mobility.
For sure. So, okay, let's start with the everyday stuff. How does the average Evo, you know, get around?
Well, it seems like this ambient energy grid is central. Powers vehicles across all seven colonies, Lenoke, Olympia, Cronus, Petra, Angkor, Carthage, Zion. It's like the base layer.
That makes sense. Sort of the foundational infrastructure. And this grid lets everything integrate, right? Personal transit, public transit.
Yeah. And the author describes hover bikes almost like reimagined motorcycles, but flying.
Sounds like they're meant to be pretty accessible. You know, for a lot of Evo.
Seems that way. Which makes the contrast with the flying cars really interesting.
How so?
Well, the tech for personal flying cars exists, but the author mentions these significant airspace fees. So basically, flying your own car becomes a luxury item.
Ah, okay. So it's not just about having the vehicle, it's about paying to use the sky. That's clever.
It introduces this economic reality, doesn't it? Even in a super advanced future.
Yeah, it does. You can see how that might create social tiers, maybe?
Mm-hmm.
Affect where people live or work based on whether they can afford air travel?
Could definitely add some friction.
And that probably makes the transporters even more crucial for the majority.
Right. Let's get into those because they sound fascinating, especially given the Evo themselves.
Okay, yeah. So the Evo, they're these half-human, half-animal hybrids, right?
Yeah.
Engineered for rapid evolution.
Which means thousands of different, well, ethnic backgrounds based on animal traits. Huge diversity in physical form.
Exactly. So how do you build a public transport system for that? Different heights, shapes, anatomies.
Yep.
It's a massive design challenge.
And so what's the solution?
The transporters. The author describes them as these adaptable flat surfaces. They basically conform to whoever or whatever steps onto them.
That's brilliant. So the transport adapts to the user, not the other way around.
Pretty much. It mirrors the adaptability of the Evo species itself, in a way.
And how do they actually move? It's not just the adapting surface.
Right? No. They use gravitational displacers and run on magnetic railways inside these big alloyed tubes.
So high speed, high capacity.
Extremely. We're talking about moving potentially millions of Evo across huge distances very quickly. Minutes, apparently.
Wow. Okay. The efficiency game for a society like that. It's hard to even imagine.
Yeah, and the author mentions that the architecture in the colonies has adapted around these transport systems. Cities designed with these networks as, like, the main arteries.
Makes sense. You'd build around your primary mode of mass transit. Okay, let's zoom out a bit. Bigger picture. colonial power, getting off planet.
Right. So there's a clear line drawn between warships and spaceships.
Warships are more local.
Yeah, basically. They're for the colonial military, designed for operations within the seven colony system, near space stuff, projecting power within their sphere.
And spaceships.
Those are the long-haul vessels, built for true intergalactic travel, going way beyond their home system, and usually built in space, apparently, for efficiency.
Okay. And not every colony has these capabilities.
Seems not. The material points to Olympia, Petra, Lennox, and Zion having active space programs.
With Olympia out in front.
Yeah, Olympia seems to be leading the charge. They're explicitly aiming for off-world colonization, starting with Jupiter's moons.
That says a lot about their ambitions. They're not just staying put.
Definitely not. It's a serious commitment.
Yeah.
You know, building colonies elsewhere shows a long-term vision.
And something else you mentioned earlier, the author apparently put a lot of thought into the actual design of the ships, wants them to be unique, recognizable.
Yeah, he specifically mentioned wanting to avoid generic designs, aiming for something iconic, like you see in Star Trek or Star Wars.
Why do you think that visual distinctiveness matters so much in sci-fi?
Well, I think it really helps with immersion, doesn't it? Makes the universe feel more real, more tangible. Think about the Millennium Falcon or the Enterprise.
Yeah, you see the shape, you instantly know the story.
Exactly. Memorable ships add this whole other layer of richness to the world building.
Okay, right. Now, we need to put up a bit of a spoiler flag here for Volume 1, The Commencement Day Massacres. Listener, heads up if you haven't read it yet.
Good call. Because this advanced tech, especially transport, it has really direct and sometimes brutal consequences early on. This is where teleporters come in.
Ah, yes. Not the everyday transporters, then.
No, definitely not. These are presented as much more exclusive, instantaneous travel, but mainly for the elite political leaders, that kind of thing.
So another layer of transport, another layer of privilege, basically.
Pretty much. And this exclusivity becomes absolutely central to the plot. There's a character bunny.
A black market teleporter, tied to the Primeans, the mutant group.
That's her. And something terrible happens to her during a teleport transit.
It's pretty grim. They forcibly extract her bone marrow and blood mid-teleport.
Horrific. And this event is partially witnessed by Eve, the Lanathian Guardian. It kicks off a whole chain reaction.
Because Eve manages to analyze the data from that attack, even as she's, well, fading.
Yeah.
She sends it to the Coalition.
Right. And that data, that analysis of what happened to Bunny biologically during that forced extraction, that becomes the key.
The key to the blink drive.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's fascinating scientifically how they piece it together. They combine Bunny's unique biological material with this substance called Peebold device.
Which is described as a superconductor, but with liquid and organic properties.
Yeah, really weird stuff. But that combination allows them to create an engine capable of instantaneous teleportation for warships.
Whoa. Okay, so that's not just a fancy new engine. That completely shifts the power dynamic.
Totally.
Right?
Because the Guardians, who've been protecting the Evo for ages, they're facing this program shutdown.
Right.
And suddenly, the Coalition, armed with this blink drive tech, they step into that power vacuum. They become the dominant force, positioned as the new protectors.
So warships that can just appear anywhere, instantly. Mm. That's a massive strategic advantage.
Unprecedented. Allows for lightning-fast deployment, surprise attacks. It makes it crystal clear how all these transport systems, the everyday transporters, the warships, the spaceships, they're all tangled up in the power struggles we see in the Commencement Day massacres.
You can tell the author really thought this through, even trying to ground the tech. You mentioned he did a lot of research.
Yeah, across different industries, apparently, to make the ship designs feel, you know, plausible, at least the warships.
So what kind of real-world science is he drawing on for those colonial warships?
It's an interesting mix. For the anti-gravity aspect, he seems to be looking at, well, mostly theoretical stuff right now.
Like what?
Things like electromagnetic gravity manipulation, using EM fields to mess with gravity, high-voltage electrogravity, inertial mass reduction, which is the idea of making something easier to accelerate, and advanced magnetic levitation, like high-power maglev trains, but scaled up.
But that's all pretty speculative, isn't it? Anti-gravity?
Oh, very. He acknowledges that. But it's fertile ground for sci-fi. For propulsion, though, he draws on more established tech.
Hydrogen.
Yep. Liquid hydrogen engines, like the RS-68A, which is a real engine used on rockets today. Also hydrogen fuel cells, like the space shuttle used for power. He even touches on hybrid electric hydrogen concepts for maybe interstellar stuff. though storing that fuel long-term is a huge challenge.
Okay, that feels more grounded. And what about the hulls? You mentioned solar-absorbing hulls.
Right, this idea that the hull isn't just armor, but also a power source. It's pretty cool. He cites actual research areas here.
Oh.
Yeah, like nanoparticle composites being developed. I think you mentioned UC San Diego. And these things called metallic dielectric photonic crystals from MIT. Basically, advanced materials engineered to absorb sunlight really efficiently and handle heat.
Like the heat shields NASA uses?
Sort of, yeah. He also mentions carbon composites, which NASA does use for heat resistance and strength.
And he connects this to current space companies too, right? Like SpaceX.
Yeah, SpaceX, Blue Origin, Cosmic Shielding Corporation, Vardis Space Industries, companies working on reusable rockets, radiation shielding, building things in orbit right now.
So he's trying to show a plausible path from today's cutting edge to his future tech.
Exactly. It helps anchor it, makes it feel less like pure magic, more like, well, advanced engineering.
So if you put it all together, a warship might have these electromagnetic coils for anti-grav.
Maybe, yeah, in a ring shape or something.
Hydrogen thrusters for movement.
For the main push, yeah.
A hull that soaks up sun for power.
And provides protection. Maybe modular construction, too, for easier repairs and upgrades.
Okay, that paints a pretty vivid picture.
It does. And importantly, the author doesn't just hand-wave the difficulties. He apparently hints at challenges within the story. Like, how do you manage power between shields, weapons, and this anti-grav system in a fight? Or maybe the solar hull has vulnerabilities.
Right. So the tech creates its own problems and limitations.
Which makes for better storytelling. He emphasizes, you know, that anti-gravity is the really far out bit, scientifically speaking. It needs insane amounts of power. But the other stuff, hydrogen engines, advanced materials, we're actively working on things like that now.
Allows us, the listener, to sort of buy into it more easily.
I think so, yeah. It's advanced, but presented logically.
Okay, so wrapping up this deep dive. We've gone from hover bikes whizzing around cities.
To these incredibly efficient mass transit transporters.
Then up to warships jumping instantaneously with blink drives.
And finally, true interstellar spaceships heading for Jupiter's moons and beyond.
And it's really clear, isn't it? Transportation isn't just background detail in the seven colonies.
Not even close. It's woven into the fabric of the society, the politics, the conflicts. It drives so much of the narrative.
Absolutely. So here's something for you, the listener, to think about. You've got this mix of tech, right? Some feels almost near future. Some is way more speculative, like the blink drive or practical anti-grav. Which of these advancements strikes you as the most, well, game-changing, or maybe the most disruptive?
Yeah, and building on that, what kind of unexpected ripple effects could these widespread, diverse transport methods have on a society? Beyond just the obvious stuff. What are the hidden consequences? Something to chew on.